Yes, another big guest, Lee Clark. I'm still waiting.
Oh, for the signature.
What's happening?
Ah, you pissed at us, didn't you, at the race course. What I lost your number.
By the way, I've been told you came to watch us after it, and I had an absolute shocker, didn't I?
Well, I was always watching you. I thought you caught me eye when you were playing for Swindon, and same when Paul Caddis, who ended up having it, Birmingham and Bury. So... But you were probably more expensive than Caddy, so I probably couldn't afford you.
That was a great. Was that the Unseen Trainers, by the way?
That's it. That's them. That's
how
them.
Did you manage to see it? Ah,
yeah, yeah. Listen, got links everywhere.
Man, I've got a couple of pairs of belters.
Aye, definitely.
I must say, you're looking great, mate.
Aye, lost a bit of weight, and so looking after myself again. Maybe try and get the boots back out. Well, I do play with my pals five a side. You know, so once or twice a week down at one of the Power League AstroTurf pitches, would you stick a fiver in a man and have a kick about?
You still got it?
That means you can't lose what you never had.
Not me, you were a player. I've heard you were an absolute player. Blythe Spartans just now?
Aye, tough.
Surely you'll sign us for Blythe Spartans, come on.
I definitely are, you and Caddy, get you back together.
How's it going, all right?
Tough at the moment, you know. We've new league for me, part-time. The club lost 16 players over the summer, and we tried to replace them. We tried to go with lads from lower level who found it a bit difficult. Had a heavy defeat last night after getting someone sent off after 10 minutes. So tough, but that's what the challenges are all about. As I said, something different for me. We've been part-time, only have the players two nights a week, and then play on a Saturday. And football's a secondary job, really. They've all...
been grafting all day.
Aye, tough. So like last night, a couple of lads looked a little bit off the pace, but when you're sitting chatting with your staff, you understand why. They've probably been doing a 12-hour shift before the game or something.
That must be hard for you, though, where you've managed and the places you've played.
It is, but I still enjoy the Tuesdays and Thursday nights doing the coaching. Obviously, the results at this moment in time aren't where we're wanting to be, so that hurts. So I've still got the passion for the game, no matter what level I'm working at. So... let's see, we can just try and improve them over the course of the season.
Right, on to your career now. Grew up a Newcastle lad, Newcastle fan, born and bred.
Absolutely, yeah. First game, 1980. Wasn't a particularly good era for the club. We were didn't have a great side, but stood in the famous Gallagate end and watched the team. And then 2 years later, the club took off. We signed the European Footballer of the Year, Kevin Keegan, the most high-profile footballer in Britain at the time. And the club was in equivalent to the Championship now, was League One then, or League Two, sorry, and Keegan walked through the door, and from then on in, the club was big news.
Was he your hero, Keegan?
Well, obviously he was everyone's hero. He was untouchable. When he came, the crowds went from 14,000 to 33,000 sellout capacity. A young Chris Waddle was in the team then. And then a young Peter Beardsley got signed, and Terry McDermott arrived because he was big friends with Kevin from the Liverpool days. So with that four, you weren't destined to do anything but get promoted. So it was an exciting period. The games were brilliant, the amount of goals that were scored. So he was obviously one, he was the untouchable, Kevin. And then obviously for me as a local guy, you were looking at like Chris Waddle and Peter Beardsley were the two that you looked up to. So... further down the line in the 90s when I played alongside Peter, being managed by Kevin and Terry was assistant, it was a little bit surreal. Amazing. Really.
Who would you go to the games with? Your dad?
Dad, my mates, my brother, family, any kind, you know, really. So it was, and I remember in that era as well, in the festive games, there was no public transport. I used to live on the banks of the Tyne in the east of the city, called a place called Walker, then Wall's End.
Oh, Walker, I know that.
People from there didn't have a lot of things going for them. They just had the love of football, probably. And so it was we used to have to walk to the matches in the festive period, and it was good banter. All the fans would be congregating together, and if you were with your dad or your older brother, they'd be stopping off at the pub, and so it would take a little bit longer than you thought, but all great experiences.
Mm-hmm. How did you get picked up for Newcastle?
Well, I was playing for my school and then the city team, and then got taken to the very famous Wall's End Boys Club that's produced many, many footballers for the professional game and certainly in the Premier League as well. And then they obviously used to come to those games and had scouts, and there was no academies then. It was what called Centre of Excellences, and so I joined at about 10, 11 years of age, and then at 14 signed for schoolboy forms for them. Well, signed a contract that from 14 to 21 really, which enabled schoolboy forms, YTS scheme, and then a professional contract.
Who were some of the players that you came through? Because see, when you mentioned Beardsley and Waddle there, I always think of Alan Thompson when he was at Celtic. If he hit a shot on goal, you'd shout Beardsley or Waddle. That was his shout. Was it guys like Alan Thompson?
Well,
that you came
through? Our group from Walls End Boys Club, and also who were at in the youth team together, was a goalkeeper called Ian Bennett, who played lower leagues. I actually managed him at Huddersfield. Ian had a very successful career. Steve Watson, Alan Thompson, Steve Howie, Robbie Elliott, obviously myself, a lad called Lee Makel, who works up at
Livingston,
now works at Hibs, went to Blackburn. Alan Nielsen, who played for Newcastle and went to Southampton. So there was a lot of us who, from that youth team, made the grade and went on to have careers at various different clubs at different levels.
Was that a lively, knowing a couple of the boys, was that a lively youth team?
Oh, just a bit, yeah. It was there was absolute carnage going on most days at the training ground. I mean, it was the days where we had to look after boots and kit for pros and all that. And so we'd be there early in the morning cleaning the dirty boots in a like old wooden hut, which was freezing in the winter. So you can imagine there was some shenanigans going on between when we were growing up. Gaza was around. Gaza was a young pro, obviously the up and coming thing, the big thing, and we've seen some crazy thing. He hid in a commercial dryer, you know, what the kit men use. when one of the other players, one of the senior players, was after him, a guy called Billy Whitehurst, who was a real tough nut. And Gaza kept sticking the ball through his legs and training, and Billy said in one day, in no uncertain terms, do that again in your history. So Gaza done it again, ran off and hid in this dryer, and switched the dryer on onto just the slowest spin, and there's Gaza. Maybe that's the answer to why things are going a little bit downhill at the moment. But great guy. He was very supportive of the young players because he'd come through that route himself. And was an unbelievable talent. But some of the things he'd done in and around the training ground. And as I said, we used to get changed as well in a little room that used to be the old boot room, so it was tiny. So there was about 16 or 17 of us in there. The banter that was flying about, and when it was our birthdays, you know, we got jumped on with and deep heat and boot polish and Vaseline. So it was interesting times.
Would guys ever take you out for a night?
He'd take out. And he loved his fishing, and we just sort of feel we used to go around and go a bit fishing with him, and take it to a cafe in between St James's Park and the training ground. And as many times we've had social times with him. He was different class with us, you know. And even when he became the superstar that he was of his generation, whenever we bumped into him, be home or abroad, he always looked after us.
Brilliant. In terms of older players, you said Billy Whitehouse, coaches as well. Were they ruthless with young players back then?
Oh, aye. I mean, the youth team coaches, you know, having the running that were done, and we didn't have the all-weather pitch we had was a gravel pitch. So yeah, and you were trying to do sliding tackles on it, and you were gashed. And we had an old gymnasium with the basic astroturfing, but it just had breeze block walls, and we used to be bouncing each other into those walls. And I mean, at the end of the season, our jobs were to paint the training ground, and the youth team coach Colin Suggett would go across the top of the door frames, which you couldn't really reach, and to check if there was any dust. If there was, we had to redo the whole training ground again. And so it was a tough school, but a one that gave where, you know, great discipline, and made me realise when we did eventually become pros what we had.
See, when you got into the first team, were you a bit intimidated, or were you kind of loud?
I was very cocky. In fact, when before I got in the first team, my three professionals was a young striker called David Robinson, a Danish striker called Frank Pingle, who played in the first team, and Mickey Quinn. They were my pros, and one day on the Saturday, Frank had scored a ridiculously own goal against Coventry at St James, and we'd lost 1-0. And we're in the boot room, and the old wire brushes that used to take the mud off the boot.
Scarifiers,
come across the back of my hand, it was all gosh. And I said to the lads, listen, Frank, I'm cleaning his boots, and he's absolutely rubbish. Like, so I took his kit in, like, with his boots, blood all over my hand. And I said, Frank, listen, it's the last day I'm doing your boots. I says, I'm 16, mate, I'm better than you. And he's like, Lee, you probably are. And I looked across, and Quinny said, you say that to me, pal, and you'll be getting a ride too. So I would never have said it to Quinny, like, and but Quinny, obviously, great goal scorer. And when they talk about all the stats now and they talk about assists, I probably got 27, 28 assists for Quinny that season. I didn't play because I cleaned his boots. They were my assists. So,
Would he sort you out?
Well, the story was, I thought, I was giving it the big in to the lads at Christmas time coming up, and I was like, ah, Quinny, he's on like, I think he was on about 25 goals at the time. He had a ridiculous season. And I was like, the lads, ah, Quinny's going to weigh us in, lads. Got to give us at least a ton. And if he does, we're out. Like, I'll take you out. I'll sort out all the drinks. And I says, so I was giving it the big in for a couple of weeks. And he came in this morning. He says, come and see us up the train. I've got your Christmas present. So I thought, yeah, brilliant. And as that goes in, he hands us a bag. And I looks in it, and it was a Nike T-shirt, but I don't know if you remember Quinny, he was a big guy. Yeah. And when I opened the T-shirt out, it was obviously one that had been sent for him. It was, so it doubled up as a continental quilt for us. So when I walked back in with my tail between my legs, because I'd been giving it the big in to the other lads, they were just bursting out laughing. They were laughing, but they were also gutted because they were hoping for a night out off the back of me. So
surely you caned them for getting you that T-shirt, though.
Eh?
Surely you caned them and said, where's the money?
Oh, no, I wouldn't cane Quinny. He would have just clipped us. You knew, like, I knew Frank was a nice bloke and he wouldn't respond. But if I had said, like, and I'd have had a pop at Quinny, it would have been a right hook coming my way. But there was obviously some guys I played with that you would know very well, Mark McGee.
Yeah.
Roy Aitken was my partner.
Roy Aitken's one of my questions. How was he? Scary.
Roy was a great guy. Obviously came, he was massive. I think he was, I don't know if he still is, record appearance holder for Celtic. He was at the time. He's obviously captain of Scotland. Yeah. And so we get him down. And I remember one game, one of my first games on my debut, and we had Jim Smith, who was frightening. Jim as a manager, especially for me being 17, he gives me debut, and he's there, Roy, you're captain of Scotland, what's going on, you useless man, what are you doing? I'm thinking he's coming to me next, what's he going to be saying? He bypassed us and all that. And but Roy and Mark was a top player, and they were experienced. They knew how to handle Jim at the time. Mickey Quinn, Kevin Dillon, John Burridge, all these guys, Ray Ranson, had a lot of experience. So they knew how to handle me. I was a little bit intimidated, only being 17. Now I look back, Jim was a good manager, just obviously too strong at the time. Yeah. Well, not too strong. He just obviously, when you're only 17, you get a bit intimidated by that. But those guys were different class for me, to be alongside them. Obviously, I've managed against Mark as well up in Scotland since then. And obviously, so it's a bit weird for him seeing that he was the senior pro and I was the youngster in the group. But it was a good grounding for
us. Can you remember your debut?
My initial debut was coming on as a sub for Neil Simpson, ex-Aberdeen.
Right,
Simo got injured after about half an hour down at Bristol City, September 1990, and came on after half an hour. So, and then the week after was my full debut at home to West Brom.
At St James's?
Aye.
Keane, were you starting?
I started 0-0.
You know, the night before you were starting?
I had an idea because Jim was big on doing his team shape on a Thursday and that, but without naming the team, so you didn't want to count your chickens. But it was daunting. The game, I can't remember a lot about the game. Portland was a horrible 0-0 against West Bromwich Albion. So I think the occasion passed us by. But at the time as well, I couldn't drive. It took us a while before I passed my driving test, and I used to get the bus from my house to the stadium, and the driver used to let us off with a bus fare. So because obviously they knew who I was when I was getting on the bus. So it was a little. Now you see the young lads pulling up in Lamborghinis and all that.
Brilliant, isn't it? Was your dad and pals not at the game or
here? Aye, all of them. My family, brother and sisters, brother-in-laws.
Does nothing beat the debut playing for your hometown team?
You live in the dream, aren't
you? Was there anything in your career that surpassed that at all?
Nah. You know, the best thing that happened is I started my career and then unbelievably never ever thought it would happen. I ended my career there as well, so playing-wise, and that's living the dream. I see it now when I go back, and you think, you know, that you performed in front of this in the stadium in big Premier League games and Champions League games and Europa League. It was UEFA Cup when I played, but it, you know, now known as the Europa League. So, great.
How was your mates for you when you make your debut in that and you're in Newcastle? They all buzzing as well.
Couldn't believe it had happened, you know. It was because when I first went to watch, you never ever think that you're going to be getting chosen to play because you don't know how ultimately they end up becoming Newcastle United footballers. So you just think that something different happens to them. So, you know, but as you get older, you know, you get the opportunity. So, and it was living the dream, basically.
Amazing. You mentioned Jim Smith, Screwball. What's the worst you've seen him crack?
Oh, full teapots, teacups. One of the funny stories was when I made my debut for a home game, we used to have to wear our own shirt and tie and jacket. So I went and spent 25 quid in C&E on a full outfit. And when I got in the dressing room, all the senior lads were hanging their nice suits up and putting towels across their suits. And I thought, oh, well, this must be what you do when you're an established pro. So I just hung my suit up. I didn't put a towel over it. And when we came in at half time, Jim picked up the old silver teapot and with the cups and threw it at the wall and the tea went everywhere. And that's the reason why scale of what where you were in the pecking order. It was just they were protecting their suits.
So did you put the suit on with the tea all over?
Listen, it didn't really spoil it. It was a minging outfit, and anyway, to be fair,
something never changes. Did it come a bit of surprise when Ozzy Ardiles replaced Jim?
Aye, but for us, the young players, Ozzy gave us our head. Still keep in touch with him. I'm actually doing a gig with him next month for Wall's End Boys Club, and he was a great man. He was for the young players. Like I talked about all them young players before, he put us all in the team together. There was exciting games. There was lots of 4-4s and getting beat 5-4 after being 3-0 up. And the first ever live game on Sky was the cup competition called the Simod Cup, and it was Newcastle v Tranmere, and we played in it and we drew 6 each in normal game, and then it went to penalties. And Sky must have thought, well, we hope all these games are going to be like this. I think Quinny scored 4 and John Aldridge scored 4 for them, or 3. They both got hat-tricks, I know that. And this was down to Ozzy. We weren't allowed to call him Boss or Gaffer. We had to call him Ozzy. He had Tony Galvin with him, the ex-Tottenham winner. Yeah. And he was just a great man. Even though it was a tough period for him, because what was happening behind the scenes, the club was wanting to be... It was a group called the Magpie Group, which had been run by Sir John Hall, who eventually bought the club, was wanting to buy the old regime out because there was no finance. And Ozzy was stuck in the middle, really. Didn't really have a lot of finance. We bought a player called David Kelly, a striker, and Ozzy actually bought him out of his own money for quarter of £1 million, and it was like interest-free loan to the club. So he eventually got that money back, but he didn't know with the predicament the club was in. So it was a tough period, and when he left, it was hard for all us young lads because we stuck up a great relationship with him. But he was funny. He'd be signing photos of him alongside Diego Maradona, and he'd say like things like "Clarky here," and he used to say "I made him" about Maradona, and
legend.
He's won the big one, hasn't he? The World Cup. So, and he was a fantastic footballer. I mean, in training.
Did he join in it?
Listen, most of the managers I played for were still top draw. I mean, him, Keegan, Daglish, Souness, Tigana, ridiculous, Reedy, it's Sunderland. I mean, all top players, and they were still competitive when they joined in.
See, Ardiles, was it Total Football? Did he just want you to express yourself?
Yeah, yeah. Play was his partner. We played all. But it was
that's what you want as a young kid,
it was. It was great in his broken English. We're playing at Barnsley at Oakwell one day, and he sat and he said, obviously the bitty bitty bubbly, and but we still play. And I looked and he said, what's the matter, Clarky? You not understand English? And I thought, a bit strange, but what a fantastic guy. And as I said, I've kept in touch with him. When he left, he went to West Brom, and then he got the Tottenham job, and he was very interested in taking me to Tottenham. But
I'd have been decent that, wouldn't it?
Aye, but I wasn't going to leave Newcastle at that stage to go there. But I still keep in touch now, very regular. And as I said, we're meeting up in October to do a gig together for Wolves End Boys Club.
Tremendous. So obviously you were gutted when he got sacked.
We all were, because he'd give us great belief in ourselves. He showed a great vote of faith. But that was tempered by the fact that the Messiah was coming back.
How soon did you know that Messiah was coming?
Well, it happened quite quickly within a few hours.
And were you buzzing?
Of course. I mean, you know, I'd been there to see him absolutely change the club from a run-of-the-mill, mid-table, no ambition, League One club. Now the Championship, as I said, to getting them in the top level. Exciting nights. I mean, remember, it wasn't the television and live television of matches that there is now, but Newcastle were, when Kevin came as the first, back as a player at first, were quite regular on the TV. And that was like quite unique for Newcastle fans to see that team in a live football match. And it was because of what Kevin brought. So he brought all this publicity and stardust when he played. So to think what he was going to do as a manager, but no one ever believed how he was going to change things round from where the club was. He came in three quarters into the season. We just escaped relegation from the Championship. And then over that summer, he rebuilt the squad and we ran away with the league and then got promoted. And then every year we're challenging to win the title.
So what did he change? Was it just bringing in better players?
Aye, experienced players, top quality players. I mean, John Beresford had a fantastic run in the FA Cup with Portsmouth. He's on the verge of signing for Liverpool. Don't know what happened with the breakdown of his talks there. We signed him as left back. We signed Barry Venison, who was a league winner with Liverpool, an FA Cup winner with Liverpool, so he'd played at the highest level at a huge club. Paul Bracewell, who'd won big things with Everton, who's going to end up being my mentor in midfield, who was me and him. He'd already signed a leader in Brian Kilcline, and you know he was always developing the team. So it was in those days as well. There was no transfer window, so you could continually buy and bring players in. So he was always enhancing the team, and then he brought Scott Sellers in, who had a wand of a left foot. I mean, an unbelievable player. Kevin Sheedy, you know, as well. We just had, and then we just went on a run, and we won the first 11 games out of 11, and we were just on a roll. And then to top everything off, he brought in Coley, Andy Cole, from Bristol City, and Coley just went on a ridiculous run in terms of scoring. And then, obviously, we romped the Championship, and then we got in the Premier League. And he was ruthless in his recruitment. I mean, David Kelly had scored over 30 goals to get us to the Premier League. And without playing a Premier League game, he sold him to Wolves and replaced him with Peter Beardsley. And so that's how he was doing it. He was, thanks very much, lads. You've done what I needed you to achieve. We're going to the next level. I'm not going in there as an also ran. I want to go in there and challenge. And that's what he said to us.
What was so good about him was that his enthusiasm, your manager, coaching?
Not coaching, you know, in terms of... understood the game, of course he did, he was a top player, so but it was his man management, his motivation, his passion, the whole package, how he treat you, how he looked after you and your family, made everyone feel really great about themselves, got a great group of players together, moulded them, moulded a team, knew what he wanted, knew how to improve the team on a regular basis, and was just, you know, just led from the front. I mean, as I said, joined in most of the sessions in any way.
Did you ever smash him?
Oh, of course, aye, loads of times. Aye.
Did you?
Aye, there's certainly times when he left us out the team, and I was a bit of a hothead. I think he's seen, he was a manager who wore his heart on his sleeve. We knew what Kevin was about, we knew what mood he was in. And I think he's seen a little bit of that in me, and that's why I think we had a strong relationship.
Did he take to you straight away?
Aye. I mean, I was there from the first day he arrived till the day he left. I mean, even when you talk about, you know, his emotions, when I knew something up the day he ended up quitting was we played Charlton in an FA Cup tie down in the Valley. And when he got on the bus, he looked really flat. We drew the game. We played all right. We hadn't been poor or anything, but, you know, we drew the game, and he just looked very flat. And then it was announced later on that evening, early morning, that he'd quit the club, which when we talk about, you know, being shocked and gutted, the players were certainly absolutely, you know, totally gutted, because he was the leader. He was the man who was taking us forward, was helping us to be part of a group that was, you know, everyone's favourite second team, really. Yeah. I think, you know, in Sky had nicknamed us the Entertainers, so it was always it was a great era to be part of.
See, the promotion back to the Premier League, how good's Newcastle when you're winning stuff, you've won a league and you're back up to the...
It was a roller coaster. Aye, I mean, it took away from this hotel,
yeah,
to the Civic Centre, which is 3.5-4 mile. It took us 4 or 5 hours on the open top bus. It was just absolute carnage. We were hanging on top of lampposts and streetlights, and it was great.
Did you just go up with the fans as well? Would you get nights out with the fans?
Ah, listen, that we had the relationship between the players and the fans then was unbelievably strong. That's one of the areas in today's world that I get disappointed about. Yeah. But we had great times where after results, home or away, we'd be in town in the pubs, in the nightclubs, and the fans would be there, and they'd, you know, never refused an autograph, any player or a pitcher. I mean, obviously wasn't the camera phones there then, a great relationship between players and fans.
Who would be the usual suspects? It would be who you'd be with?
Everybody.
The whole team?
The whole group. And then
would Kevin Keegan encourage it?
Yeah, of course, at the right time, because he knew that we trained unbelievably hard. The tempo of the training, because the standard of the player was so high, and everyone was fighting to get in the team. We knew we had to impress Monday to Friday. But whenever we socialised as just players, everyone was there. But whenever we socialised with our wives or girlfriends, everyone was there again. No one was not included on the nights out, and no one never not went. And we had a great relationship. There'd be, if we had any kind of parties back at the houses or whatever, family celebrations, the whole squad was invited with our partners and all that. So it showed in how we'd done things on the pitch as well.
Because you finished third in the first season back in the Premiership.
Aye.
Was that down to team spirit?
Down to good players.
Yeah.
And being a good team. But obviously the spirit that would, you know, brought together, because... But when I talk about spirit as well, we weren't frightened to...
fight with each other?
Well, have debates, aye. Strong debates during training. Training was heated because everyone was wanting to win. Everyone was wanting to be picked on a Saturday. Matches, we weren't worried about falling out with each other over the course of the game. And then we enjoyed each other's company afterwards. There was no fallout, there was no follow-on from that. Exactly. Everyone was there to win. And if we had to give each other a little rattle to get the result, we'd done it.
Brilliant. You mentioned Andy Cole. How did you know straight away that he was going to be a top player?
Well, I was good pals with him, unbelievably. He's from Nottingham. He was playing at Arsenal at the time. Obviously, at Geordie, playing at Newcastle. And when we got together for the England youth squads, me and him hit it off, so we could become good pals. And the morning we signed him, Kevin, we were on our way to Swindon to play a game. And we Kevin rang and said, I've got a surprise for you. And it's like, what? He says, oh, I've got your mate here. We just signed him from Bristol City. And I think he made his debut that day down there as a sub. And then it just rocketed his goal record in the famous jersey, number 9 jersey, which is obviously famous for some unbelievable players wearing it, and what they've done was ridiculous, you know.
What kind of guy is Andy Cole?
He's quiet. He's unassuming. People thought it was arrogance. It wasn't. He was very... he found it difficult at first when he came, because obviously it's like living in a goldfish bowl where every fan wants to support you. So you went to a shop, you went to a supermarket, you went to a restaurant, you went to a bar, you went to a fill your car up. Everyone wanted to talk about the team and talk about you. And Andy found that a little bit difficult. Not because he was aloof or big time. It was not something he wasn't used to, you know. But, you know, he was fine. And obviously when he got the move to Man United, that was a big shock. But it was Kevin then doing what he felt was right to then kick the team on again, you know.
Uh-huh. See, being a local lad, like, see defeats and stuff like that, would you bear the brunt of it more than others?
Well, we felt it. I mean, we had an unbelievable record. I think we averaged, during Kevin's years, 6 years or something, it averaged one home defeat per season. So we very rarely lost. Yeah. So it was, whenever we did, it was tough, and it wasn't a feeling we were used to. So, it didn't sit well with us. And what it meant was that it affected your weekend. You never went socialising when you lost football matches. You didn't go out in the town and all that.
I did. That's why I'm sitting here.
We didn't. we didn't. We felt it wasn't the right thing to do with the supporters.
Uh-huh. Going into the 95-96 season, was there a genuine belief that you could win the league?
Of course, we were getting better all the time. Some of the signings we'd made, Ferdinand had arrived.
Beardsley, Robley, Ginola. Wow.
Well, Robley came in the championship season. You know, I forgot to mention him, you know. And that's silly, because he ended up being one of the club's best ever signings. Went from a right winger to a centre midfield player, and unbelievable footballer. Great, great lad as well. Had a great relationship with Rob. And so, Ginola.
How good was Ginola?
Unplayable. I mean, I've seen him just absolutely terrorise people. For the first 6 months I played with him, it was just like, wow, this guy's just like unstoppable. And for what he didn't do without the ball, the rest of us were prepared to do a little bit extra, because what he was doing with the ball, making and scoring of goals, was just on a different planet to what we'd been used to. We had him on one wing, who loved to dribble, was strong as an ox, 6 foot odd. We had Gillespie on the other wing, who was just rapid, direct. And with them two, it was quite simple, easy to be a midfield player, because you just give them the ball. And then obviously you've got Ferdinand and Beardsley up top. Which was, you know, Les, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
But
fantastic.
Good laugh.
Great guy, but fantastic footballer as well, but just so humble, so nice.
Who'd have been like, see, when you're going for leagues and it's that top-end Premiership football, do you still get characters and jokers in the dressing room, or is it all quite serious?
Oh, no, that dressing room was crazy. Yeah.
What sort of stuff?
Well, for example, later on, when Shearer arrived and Aspia arrived, there was like, we went through a stage where we're just cutting sleeves off each other's clothes, the toes out the socks, so when they put them on, they were up, and Tino was bearing the brunt of it most occasions. Philippe Albert was a great laugher. What a footballer he was, by the way. I mean, wow, centre-half. He was one of the first ever centre-halves to come out and talk about playing from the back. I've seen him go up the full length of the pitch, playing give and goes with people. He was phenomenal, and he loved the laugh and the banter with the lads. So some crazy things gone on, but great spirit.
See, Ginola, was he a god? And he's gorgeous. He was gorgeous, isn't he?
Oh,
you wouldn't stand next to him in the team photo, would you?
No, but you did on a night out.
Did you get all sorts, didn't you? Love that, man. Would he have been the best that you played at Newcastle, do you know?
Well,
talent-wise?
For the first 6 months, as I said, unplayable. And then obviously you have the godlike Shearer for the goals. But in terms of ability-wise, Beardsley was the standout
Beardsley
player.
Beardsley was he,
aye. For me, I mean, some of the things he could do with the football, and a maker and taker of goals. And they talk about the new systems now and the number 10. Peter was the original number 10 without it being a position then. And if you know, he was like that in the World Cup when he assisted Lineker with all them goals.
Brilliant. Was the style of play that season the best Newcastle's ever seen?
Well, that's what they say.
Do you
people,
think
people
you
still think talk about the era now, all the fans that when we go, if ever go back to St James's or they stop us in the street and they want to talk about it, they see it. And as I said, they were everyone else's second favourite team, and Sky dubbed us the entertainers, and we were on a regular basis, live on television, no matter where we're playing, home or away, and we never changed our philosophy. So it was phenomenal, the goals, the amount of goals we scored, and the manager was just, if they score three, we score four, if they score four, we score five, and it would be better if we kept a clean sheet, but it wasn't a be-all and end-all, and he just made sure that we went out and attacked teams.
So local lad, top of the Premiership, is that, are you treated like a king in Newcastle, huh?
Oh, I was saying, when you play for Newcastle United, it even doesn't matter how things are going, you get treated very well off.
Do
the
you,
people,
huh? Even if things are not going great, huh?
Well, I was, you know, not trying to sound big-headed, I wasn't really part of a team that...
Didn't do well, huh?
Aye. The only time was probably under Ozzy, but we were young players and the fans were very appreciative of the young players coming through. They could see we had talent, we're just a little bit naive, 16, 17, 18 at the time. So, and they could see we were, and we got a little bit of leeway because we were one of them, we were local lads as well, do you know what I mean? So,
you said previously that dropping you for David Batty affected the title run. You still go with it?
Aye, of course. 12 points clear in my last game at Main Road. But when I talk about David Batty, I don't talk about him in a negative way. He was a fantastic footballer, international footballer, brilliant lad, could pass a ball. But just the way we were set up at the time, I'd been an attacking midfield player, been converted to be the deeper midfield player. I wouldn't say a defensive midfield player, because I'm not sure Kevin ever wanted a defensive midfield player, but I was the deeper one who would start our attacks. Because of me forward thinking in terms of me attacking mode, we could get the passes into in between the lines very quickly, and I just felt David was a great signing, a fantastic signing, but you know, we had rhythm, and I didn't play in the last 9 games of the season and we're 12 points clear when I got taken out of the side. So I'm always going to back my own judgment on that.
Would you go and see Keegan?
Oh, regularly.
As soon as you were
drop? Aye, of course.
And what would his excuse be?
No, he wasn't, he was very open, he was honest, and so he would, you know, probably say that he felt David was better for the role. So, which in all honesty, David had played that type of role. And as I said, he was a terrific footballer. I just felt the continuity we had in the team at the time. So, yeah, there was, I always had conversations. And Kevin was good. He would always, if he dropped you, he would always give you an explanation to, in his office for what the reasons were. He would never hide from that situation.
Mm. Signing a Spear. Was that a positive or a negative?
Positive.
Is he a madman, isn't he?
Absolutely. Crazy. He's a bigger nutter than he came across on the telly. He came across as a nutter on the telly as well. I mean, coming back from Colombia with a little bit of a bullet wound in his calf. We thought it was from a bad tackle, and he said it was from a bullet wound. And, you know, so... Pally with Pablo Escobar and all that. So that's it, used to say it all, doesn't it? If that's one of your good mates, you know you're a bit of a crazy horse.
Oh, wow.
He used to shop at the Disney World shop. So he used to come in with a white shirt with Tweety Pie on, and the lads would cut his sleeves off and cut it up, and you'd hear you Geordie Bees and all that. And it was just crazy. I remember his debut down at Middlesbrough. We played away, and it was the first time we'd met him. He was in for pre-match meal, and he had a half a carafe of red wine with his food, and this must be the thing in Italy, in Parma when he was, and he was sub, and we were like thinking, wow, he's having a few drinks before the game, and he came on sub, and he set up the winner for Steve Watson. We beat Middlesbrough down there in a local derby 2-1, and we thought, this guy's a magician, and obviously the night against Barcelona when he scored the hat-trick showed you what a type of player he was, but he was just a phenomenon. He had these funny gangly legs, but he could just like be in control of the ball. So at the time, we had 4 strikers, and the 4 were Faustino Espria, Les Ferdinand, Alan Shearer, and Peter Beardsley.
Wow.
And they were the selection dilemmas the manager had. And we had a little spell. We went into Europe, and actually all four of them were injured. We played Monaco, John Tigana's Monaco. When probably, I think I ended up having to play up front in one of the games because none of those guys were fit. And you think, what that four strikers would be worth today, man. Mm-hmm. It'd be like, wow, scary.
Would they four get on, or with the competition for places?
Oh, I got on. Listen, everyone got on.
Yeah.
You know.
But they big names when they get left out. How did they take it?
Well, it was hard, and sometimes all they didn't. You know, Peter would maybe play a bit of a deeper role, and it'd be Alan and Les as the front two, and all that. So, and maybe Faustino coming off the bench or playing in a wide area. So, you know, Kevin handled the situation very well. He kept all the players happy in terms of being open and honest with them. Difficult when you've got so many big players and big egos, but he handled it well.
I love Despria, man.
Ah, he's crackers, man, crackers.
Was there feeling around, what was the feeling around the dressing room when the gap started to close in Man United?
No, there wasn't any talk of it. I mean, the lads never, we never used to talk about it and say, well, we've got to do this because it's dropped to 6 points or it's dropped to four. It was just try and win the next game. So there wasn't really much communication about it in between the lads.
Did they panic at it?
Didn't seem to be, but the results just didn't follow. We lost to the Liverpool in the famous 4-3. We obviously lost to Blackburn. You know, so it was coming increasingly difficult. Cantona was on fire for Man United. Schmeichel was on fire for Man United. We always played, if they played on the Saturday, we'd play on the Sunday and vice versa. So we're always being able to watch what they were doing because they were usually on live and we were on live the next day or vice versa as well. So, and we could see Cantona would score a last minute winner and Schmeichel would make some brilliant saves. And I think another factor is we didn't have enough players who'd been inexperienced that and won it. I think we had Peter Beardsley, who'd been a top level winner. Barry Venison, Paul Bracewell. I'm not even sure if Brace was still around. He might have been at the time. And I think that was it, really, where Man United's full squad had experience winning it. And they knew that it was, you know, late March, April, when there's a time where it kicked in.
See, the games against Man United, who would you be up against? Keane
and Scholes.
And what would you give them a bit?
The best two.
They were the best two?
Without a doubt.
Really?
Aye, they could do everything. Both could do everything. Could smash you, could pass, could run box to box, could score. What different class. And then I had through Coley, I had the chance to meet up with both of them away from football, and they were unbelievably good, great guys, very, very humble. I remember when Roy was manager of Ipswich and I was manager of Huddersfield, and I signed Jordan Rhodes from him. When we're in dialogue between each other, I left as a voicemail message and said on the voicemail, Lee, it's just Roy Keane from Ipswich Town leaving a message. And I thought, Roy, I know who you are. You don't need to tell us which club you're at. Everyone knows who you are.
Brilliant. But see, in game, would you be the type, obviously knowing your personality, would you?
I had to go toe-to-toe with him.
But verbal as well?
Not really.
Nah.
Not really. Didn't really get myself involved with that once or two. Twice with odd players, but just to give a bit back, it wasn't really my scene, to be honest.
Do you think you were at that level with Keenan Scholes that season?
Me personally?
Yeah.
No, they were world class. They were world class. They were in the top bracket. They were in the top bracket.
Were you just underneath that then?
Well, I've considered myself a good player, but they were world class. I mean, you know, some of the midfields that were about, Vieira and Pitti were playing for Arsenal at the time. So some of the midfield players you come up against, you know, a young Steven Gerrard and Alonso I faced in my career, and you know, so there was some outstanding central midfield players of that time.
Brilliant. Rob Lee said the poor form that led to the lead slipping was due to failing players' confidence. You go along with that?
Well, probably did, because as I said to you, we hadn't been a team that had lost on a regular basis, and during that end period was probably when we lost more games on the run than we probably ever had. So, you know, that could be a factor.
Did you just try and change anything there? Just keep going the way it was?
No, we didn't believe that things needed change because it had worked for us for so long. And it worked for us after that as well. It was just that period of time, you know.
Ferguson's mind games, I wanted to ask you. He went heavy on the mind games. Could you see it affecting Keegan before his big run?
Nah, as I said, he was a very emotional man. And he felt that... It was a Tuesday night game we'd played at Ellen Road. We won the game. We were playing Forest on the Thursday, and then we had a game on the weekend. I think was the last game of the season. I think we were home to Spurs, maybe. And we were then at the end of the season, we're going back to Forest to play in Stuart Pearce's testimonial. And I think Sir Alex had questioned whether Forest on the Thursday night would try because we were playing... We were taking a team and our team and all our fans to Stuart Pearce's testimonial, and that got Kevin rattled. And if you remember, he was questioning the integrity of what was being said about a man about Stuart Pearce and Forrest, because I think they ultimately beat us well on the Thursday night, or drew with us, which meant we had to win our final game and Man U had to lose at Borough, which they ended up winning. And they love it. I mean, you remember getting on the bus, and we hadn't seen it at the time, and he got on the bus, and I remember listening, and he'd said to Terry Mack, he says, "Oh, I've just went on the rampage on the TV, and when we seen it, I'd love it if we beat them. Love it." And we thought, we weren't surprised. And, you know, people talk about mind games. It was just our manager showing his passion and how he was.
Could you just have a laugh a bit of him?
Aye, we had a laugh. We used to say things to him about it, you know, love it. And he had a giggle about it. It wasn't, he was good like that. There was no big issues. There was no big deal. It wouldn't cause him a problem.
What would Kevin Keegan say today? He lost the league, Man United won it.
What did he say?
What would he say?
He didn't say a lot. If I remember rightly, I think I remember more what he said the following summer when we were in Singapore on a Far East tour, and well, we're in Bangkok, the first part of it, and he said, "Listen, guys, if you didn't realise you were playing for a big club, you should now. We've just broke the world transfer record to bring Alan Shearer back from a team that had just missed out on the league." And that was basically him saying, "We're not resting on our laurels. We know we've failed at the final hurdle. But now we want to go again." But unfortunately, didn't last that season to see it through.
See, when you lose a league like that on the last day, how long does it sit with you? Do you still think about the next season?
Now.
You still do, do you?
Sure, aye. Well, as I said, you would have been... If you have that on your CV, there's no better feeling, because people talk about it being the best league in the world, and it has been. It's obviously grown and been. It's a different challenge now. But even during that era, when you talk about the players, we talked about Keane and Scholes, the players that were playing in the league that year were the best of their
best
era.
Definitely.
With the exception of maybe one or two. Mm-hmm. You know, never got the likes of Zidane to come over, but of course.
Right, Shearer arrives. What's so good about Alan Shearer? Because he's not obviously got a great touch. He can't do a step over. What is it that instantly hits you about Alan Shearer?
He's got a very good touch, to be honest. With every part of his body, his head, his chest, his feet. He's strong, he's powerful. But what Alan could do, he could adapt his game when he had serious injuries. I don't know if you've ever seen the footage when he was playing for Blackburn and he burst through and Gary Pallister, who was known as a quick centre-half then, was hanging on his back. Because Alan was a powerful runner at the time before the injuries, and he struck the ball past Michael with unbelievable power. He had ankles like tree trunks, so he used to just, when he hit the ball, it was hit. He's not huge in terms of his height. He's not like a 6'3", 6'4", but he was phenomenal in the air, either directing headers down or crosses in movement. But for me, it was quite surreal because, you know, we're signing this player who was world class, the best of his era, the best of his type. But I'd known him. I'd grown up at Wallsend Boys Club with him.
Oh,
so when we came back, it was like it's like seeing an old mate, you know. And it was great to have him part of your group then, and it was brilliant to play. When I look back on some of the strikers that I was lucky enough to play behind as a midfield player, my career was quite easy to try and. Because if you couldn't make goals for those guys, you're never going to make goals for anyone.
Was Shearer be a good trainer? Would he be an animal in training? Nah, no interested.
All right, not bad. Finishing sessions, ridiculous. Took them ridiculously serious. Never tried to take the mickey out of goalkeepers. Was just wanting to finish. So if he had 100 shots one day, he wanted 100 goals. Five-a-sides running, didn't really. Five-a-sides, he'd come alive when the ball came to him. Running, didn't. Not interested. Match days got him excited, and the bigger the game, the more excited he'd become, and the more of a challenge for him. And and obviously the injuries that he had, people thought they would take his toll on him. They didn't. He just, what he'd done, he changed his game, he adapted his game, and that's a sign of any top class player, that you can do that. And to his last day, continue to score goals.
He looks quite serious on the TV to me.
He's a good laugh.
Is he a good laugh? Is he?
He's a different character behind the scenes.
Is he?
He likes the banter. He loved the football dressing room banter. You know, very serious guy when it came to the football and
could
winning
give it
games. Of course. He was a great leader. And he led by example, but he also led vocally as well. So, you know, it was. It was a fantastic time to have been at the club, to have played alongside him.
Right. Were you shocked when Kevin Keegan resigned?
As I said, it was.
Oh, you spoke about Charlton away.
We're seeing it in his body language. The stomach wasn't right.
Was that a bad thing about him, that you could tell how he was feeling by?
No, not really. It was
good. You liked it.
It's heart and his sleeve stuff. Yeah, yeah. We loved his passion, and well, I certainly did, and. But we were gutted. Of course, this was a guy who gave us an opportunity to do things we never thought we'd ever. Well, dream of with my local team. And so when he left the club, it was a tough one to take.
Did he talk to the boys before he went?
Not really. No. It was Kevin. It was Terry McDermott and Arthur Cox, the guys who ended up having to speak to us, and they took the team for a couple of games, and then Kenny came in.
And then another legend comes in, Kenny Dalglish.
Absolutely. What a player in training.
Well, you see, when you heard Kenny Dalglish was coming, do you genuinely get excited, even though you're a proper player? Like, do you still get excited hearing that Kenny Dalglish coming in?
Of course, you want to learn from these guys. I mean, he'd been successful at Liverpool, both as a player and a manager. He took a small provincial club like Blackburn to win the Premier League. So you're thinking, wow, this is a terrific appointment to appease everybody, the players, because the players were always like looking to the owners then to say, come on, how are you going to replace
Keegan,
an icon like Kevin? And then Kenny came through the door and was different to Kevin, because Kenny comes across quite morbid on the TV as well, and very protective of his players. He, no matter what had happened in the game, would never ever criticise the team as a group or an individual, but would certainly be, you know, pointing fingers in behind closed doors.
Could he go
there? Aye, but also was very, very humorous, very funny, and just another one here, a little bit in awe. He joined in training. It was like, what? This guy's just, probably think if they had the physical capabilities,
could the more. Play.
Oh, aye.
No way.
The quality was unbelievable, man. It was like. And so, you know, it was just.
He's known for his one-liners. Have you ever heard him cut a player down?
Oh yeah, he's funny. He's witty. He's sharp. I mean, when I've bumped into him since at various different venues, I was managing Bury, and I was at the Etihad and went to watch Man City Liverpool, and he was in there, and I was like, oh, how are you doing, Gaffer? And he's like, wee man, how are you? How did you enjoy Scotland? And obviously I'd put a bit of beef on. He says, well, it looks like you have, and anyway.
Brilliant, mate.
So he just shot us down in flames, but great. I only had probably 4 month playing under him, because towards the end of his time, I was hitting a bit of good form. We'd gone three games, and I'd scored in every game, and I was playing well. We had a cup tie coming up the following week, and he left us out for Peter Beardsley. Now, it wasn't the fact he'd left us out for Peter, because I've just spoke totally out highly. It's the fact that I thought I was playing well, and then I could have the chance of being left out. And that's when I'd made my decision about leaving the football club then. So that was probably about April. And then come the end of the season, we decided to move on.
How did he react when you told him you wanted to leave?
He was fine. He explained, we want you to stay. I can't promise anyone a start. He says, we're at a big club, which I fully understood. We'd like you to sign a new deal, an extension. And I just said, nah, listen, it's the right time for us to go. And he was very respectful of that. He allowed me, and the club didn't price us out the market, and we had one or two options. So, it was fine.
But is it a sad day when you leave?
Oh, of course it is. Yeah, of course.
Tears,
because you're leaving the club you love, and you're leaving, you know, pals, like, you know, people who you've known for many, many years. And, you know, the club can go and achieve so many big things. It is a difficult decision because you're going away from a club that's been part challenging to be the best in the business.
What did your family that say when you leave Newcastle think you're stupid?
Well, they did when I was signing my son, Linda.
What did they say when... Did you tell them I'm in talks with Sunderland before you signed?
Well, yeah, I spoke to various different clubs. I spoke... Aston Villa with Brian Little, Frank Clark, Manchester City, Jim Smith with Derby, who were Premier League. Aston Villa were obviously Premier League. Celtic and Rangers, Dick Advocaat and Tommy Burton, late great Tommy Burns. And Sunderland was the last club I met. And I remember meeting Reedy in Manchester and says, listen, Peter, I've come out of courtesy. Paul Bracewell, who I'd played alongside and played a big part of my career, he was Peter's assistant. And he'd asked us, he'd set up the meeting, and I basically said to Peter, I'd come out of respect that he'd asked to meet us, and there was no way I was going to sign. And six bottles of Laurent Perrier later, I signed a 5-year contract.
Is he a top man, Peter?
It was different class. He was in a line of managers that I loved playing for. He got the best out of us. He was a great motivator, a great manager. He assembled a great group of players, and I had two great years under him.
So did you phone your dad and say I'm training for Sunderland?
Well, what had happened is I came back, this was on a Friday, and I met them through my friends and father-in-law for a drink in town and told them that I'd agreed to sign my Sunderland, and it was a bit of a shock for everyone. So it took a, well, this, they never got round in their heads that I'd signed for them. In my second season, the first game of the season, I broke my leg. My wife and two oldest children were away on holiday. My father-in-law and his mates came in. I had an executive box at the Stadium of Light, and they came in the box to watch the game. We meant to meet up after the game, and I was in hospital. Obviously, I'd broke my leg after about half an hour. And I was wondering where they were. They're like, no one had been in touch with us, and no one had been to see us at the hospital. So I rang them and I could hear music in the background, and they were in Newcastle City Centre. And they said, where are you? We're waiting for you. And I says, well, you must know where I am. He says, no, why? I says, I'm in hospital. I broke my leg. Did you not see the incident? And they says, oh, to be fair, we shut the curtains in the box and we just got on the drink. We didn't watch the match.
Ah, brilliant, man. So is the rivalry, obviously we know Celtic and Rangers up in Scotland. Is it similar?
No, it's not on that level. It's a club rivalry, right. And it's not the religion, and that, and it's, so I used to always, this was in the Championship, I was playing my son in Newcastle, obviously in the Premier League, and I used to still go back and watch Newcastle whenever I could.
Did you, right?
Oh yeah, all the time, and there was never any issues. I never, it was friendly banter, but it never got, you know, heat, no, it never got heated, and it never got derogatory, and it never got, where it become an issue.
Would the other Sunderland players give you a bit for it, or would they not bother?
Nah, listen, they seen what I was there for when I was in the group and trained and played, and they just cracked on, you know.
What was it like putting the strip on for the first time?
Same, Ajax at the Stadium of Light and to opening the stadium, and it was fine. I got into it, and then my first home game there, we beat Man City. Me, Niall Quinn and Kevin Phillips scored, I think, so.
How good were they sort of players?
They were top class. That was an unbelievable strike force. Mm-hmm. We had Michael Bridges, a young striker who couldn't get in the team at the time.
Leeds, he played for us, Michael
Leeds, yeah, 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 in Champions League, very good player. And Kevin and Quinny were phenomenal. When you see Niall Quinn from afar, you think he's just this big 6'4" target man, but he had a magnificent touch, and he was great to play alongside him. Easy for a midfield player again, and Kevin was an unknown, and just brilliant.
Uh-huh. Peter Reid, as you said, top man, but he could blow his top, couldn't he? Worst you've seen him?
He kicked us up the backside in bottom of my hamstring at Reading. I was awful. We played at Reading. I think we lost 4-0 and I was useless. And he volleyed us and said something along the lines of, I've just wasted £4 million on you. And so, I had great, great respect for him. But he was a tough guy, a tough, tough manager.
What, to please like?
Aye. But he was, he was brilliant. He was brilliant to play for.
Alex Reid, did you play with him?
Played with Alex.
How was he, a madman?
Good player.
Put him on.
Crazy. Great player, in fact.
Was he a great player?
Doing him a disservice. Enjoyed playing alongside him. He was a good, funny guy in the dressing room, in the training ground. There's a picture of me and him at the training ground, and he's obviously saying something, and I'm just in a fit of laughter. And that was on a regular occurrence at the on the training pitch. And usually the butt of his jokes was Quinny's dress sense, so he used to get a bit of stick about that.
A few people admit, is it terrible, huh?
His
wife addresses him?
Well, it looked that way, yeah. It looked that way.
You won the first division your second season, 105 points. Was it your intention to stay for the Premier League after that?
It was difficult because I couldn't see myself playing for Sunderland against Newcastle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that was me thoughts. And I'd already informed Peter that I was looking to leave, but he wasn't having any of it. And then obviously the incident with the T-shirt just, made it untenable.
See, the morning you'd done that, were you thinking,
Well, I only had it on for 30 seconds. People seemed to think that I was wearing it around the streets of London. When I jumped out the black cab, it got thrown on us, and then the pictures got taken. I remember my father-in-law saying that, that could come back to haunt you. And I says, do you think? And so, when it came out in the public domain, it was made my position untenable. Which, when I look back now, when I'm older, more mature, you just think it's a shame because I only played for 3 clubs. And 2 of them I get welcomed back with open arms. And the other one where I had 2 great seasons, voted player of the year, that they find it difficult to forgive and forget, which I totally understand.
Do you remember the first time Peter spoke to you after it?
He was in the south of France. I was in the boardroom with the chairman and my agent, and the chairman was obviously saying it was untenable, my position would have to sell us. And Peter was adamant that the fixtures had just come out, and my first game of the season was at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea. And was adamant that I'd be in the team. He wasn't letting us go.
Really?
And,
wanted to keep you after that?
Oh, yeah. He said we could ride out the storm. And because obviously he knew, and I'd spoke to him to say that once we'd got promoted, we'd secured the league quite early, and we got to the semi-final of the League Cup as well. I think it was known as the Carling Cup then. And we got beat off Leicester over 2 legs. Neil Lennon was playing for Leicester. And after the second leg, I went in to see him, and Andy Gray was doing Sky. I just said, listen, next season's going to be difficult. It's probably easier if I move on with the opportunity. And he was like, nah, it's not happening. So he obviously was thinking this was a way of me getting out with a T-shirt, and he wasn't going to allow it. But when the phone went down, Bob Murray, the chairman of Sunderland, then just reiterated that I couldn't hang about.
Did you want to hang about now?
He couldn't.
Uh-huh. Did you get quite a bit of abuse for Sunderland fans?
Yeah, I got quite a bit of stick. And rightly so.
Is it scary?
Not so much, but I understood. You kind of bite the hand that feeds you.
You still got the T-shirt?
It was never mine.
Fulham then? Fans say we moved into London?
fantastic. Best decision I made.
Really?
Never ever thought I'd go and live in London. Whenever I played there, I thought the place was massive, daunting, when I used to walk about pre-match. But was an unbelievable move. A club on the up, crazy owner.
But what was the owner like? You got any stories about him?
Mad. Brought Michael Jackson in the dressing room. Said, hey, yeah, sees lads, he has Michael. Tony Curtis, the old famous actor.
Did Michael Jackson speak when he came in?
Didn't say a lot. The guy was throwing rose petals down on the train, on the dressing room floor as he walked in. And so we had what he'd done is the owner, he invested a lot of money. We had an unbelievable training ground that he was making better and better all the time, keeping updated. It was difficult for him to do anything with the ground. I don't know if you've played at Craven Cottage, it's right in the middle of
housing estate, isn't it?
Yeah, which is, you know, houses are worth a lot of money there. One of the stands backs onto the Thames. So he had some big plans, but there was quite a bit of, response that they didn't want, you know, workmen in there. So
I thought you were going to say Jordy's in there.
That was probably the thing, yeah. So, but what a club. What people, what a place to live. My family loved it. And, it's six brilliant years.
Was it the chairman that you met at first, or was it the manager?
It was Paul Bracewell, who was the manager, who signed his. And then I met the owner when I was doing my medical. And
what did he first say to you when you first signed?
Oh, it was just crazy. It's just some of the things he'd done. It was like, but he was very generous to the families, to the children, to the staff. Got the old Harrods discount cards and that and all that. Yeah, we were there regular and big parties. We were more successful in the main restaurant in Harrods and looked after us unbelievably. It was just a phenomenal time in a great part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get a pint with Michael Jackson there?
No, I didn't get a pint with Michael Jackson. No, I'm not. I don't think the lad's got a sing song with him either.
John T. Gannon came in as manager. What a legend, eh?
Absolutely, absolutely. What a great manager. Took it to a new level in terms of the modern day work, in terms of fitness, dietary stuff. We were training 3 times a day, sometimes 6 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So.
What, you never minded that?
Oh, we had to. We either liked it or we got out. He was in charge and he had the backing of the owner. And
was he quite strict?
Very, very. And very demanding. All about total football again, though. But we were super fit and got us into the Premier League, got us into Europe. So the club was in the up. We were, to get a club like that competing in European competition was fantastic.
Who was your mates in the film dressing room?
Chris Coleman, ended up becoming my manager. Very good pals.
He's gorgeous as well,
isn't he? Story, we played Liverpool and he was manager and I was the captain of the club and Liverpool were making a sub. Rafa Benitez was bringing Milan Baros on and I don't know if you remember the striker. Chris waved us over and I thought he was going to say something tactically and he said, good looking, innit? And I said, good looking, because he was like a mini version of Chris. And it was like, wow. It was, he could break up the seriousness with good stuff. And,
brilliant,
but John, took the club to a new level. Chris suffered a serious injuries in a car accident and his career had to stop in terms of the play and went on to the coaching staff. And then when John moved, Chris took over and was the youngest ever Premier League manager at the time. I remember in one of his, before 5 games left of the season where he was a caretaker manager. I think we won 3, drew 1 and lost 1, which got him the job ultimately. In one of those games, his first home game, I think, was v Newcastle and I scored the winner, past Shea Given. And so I keep saying to him, listen, remember who got you the job at Fulham, aye. And,
so it's even you were a captain, he was the manager, would you go for a beer nut after games? Or did you need to change?
Yeah, he had to change a little bit in terms of that. It was difficult because our families were really close as well. Our children were close. So he had to be a little bit, managerial side of it. But there was lots of occasions where him and his staff would socialise with the players in any way, because he wanted to try and have this group together. Yeah. So, but obviously it had to change. So.
Right. I need to ask you about a player who I loved, Louis Saha.
Unbelievable.
We up signed, there with your Shearers and your.
Well, I mean, when you're talking Shearer, you're talking top of the tree. Yeah. But he was certainly, when I list the top strikers, I mean, a couple of years we had him at Fulham. I think we only paid Mets 1.8 million for him, and he was just ridiculous. What a leap, what a touch, and he was finished athletic. And he obviously got the move to Man United for 17 million. We were actually, that's when the transfer windows had started coming in, and it was the January transfer window. And I think we were third or fourth top at the time, and for a club like Fulham to be third or fourth top of the Premier League was ridiculous. And we thought if we could have held on to him, we could have possibly maybe got, even if we had a drop, still got in the top six. But on deadline day, he got sold to Man United, and Chris found it difficult as the manager to replace him. And certainly weren't going to get a player of that level, of that quality. And we ended up finishing ninth, which was still a club record high at the time in the Premier League. But we just felt that if he had stayed, because he could have been, he was a match winner on his own at times. In that 4-2-3-1 system, he was perfect because he was so dynamic. His movement was brilliant. He had terrific touch. He was playing with a lot of confidence. His leap was terrific. So we could have easily finished in the top six if he had hung around. And in a January window, when you lose your best player like that, it is difficult to replace him. Difficult to replace him.
You played with some top players. One player, who's the best you've played with?
Well, when I think about all the strikers I played with throughout my career, so if I take it from the start, Mickey Quinn, David Kelly, Gavin Peacock, Andy Cole, Peter Beardsley, Les Ferdinand, Alan Shearer, Faustino Asprilla, Kevin Phillips, Niall Quinn, Louis Saha, Mike Alone, just ridiculous array of strikers.
But we have to pick one. Who are you picking?
In terms of the striker?
No, player that you played.
Peter
Beardsley.
Yeah,
better, the best.
I mean, listen. Some of them were. You know, Stevie Finnan was a fantastic footballer and playing great career for Liverpool.
Yeah, Champions League win, didn't he?
It's hard because how do you not pick a Shearer like who's just smashed every record going and.
But just the one that you enjoyed playing with the most.
In terms of enjoyment, it'd be Shearer. Yeah.
Shearer. What about best guy you've met? I love this question. Best guy in football.
Best guy in football.
Made you laugh the most. Les Ferdinand.
Oh, Ferdinand was the best guy.
What was so good about Ferdinand?
Just brilliant. It's a lovely man. Funny, but humble, respectful, treat everyone the same, spend time with your wife, your family, your brothers, your sisters.
Not too much time
with
your wife at home.
No. Well, that's one area where you, if that happens, there's no going back. Your history.
And last one on the teammates, funniest.
Funniest. David Batty was a funny guy. Funny guy. Alex Ray, unbelievably funny guy. Had some great laughs. Chris Coleman was up there. Very funny.
What was Chris Coleman's part of, like, slaughtering people?
Yeah, just like one-liners and, you know, about Clobber, what car you drove or whatever, and just cutting, like, just brilliant.
Love that banner, brilliant. Right, just finally, second spell at Newcastle. Was it surreal when Newcastle got in contact with you to go back? Did you ever think it would happen again?
Never. I was on the verge of going, I was still living down south. I was on the verge of going to Southampton, and then I potentially could have a chance to go to Leeds. And out the blue, Terry McDermott was one of Graeme Souness's assistants. And he rang us and says, come, you know, pre-season had started and I didn't have a club. This was the first time I didn't have a club. My contract ran out of Fulham. And he says, come. You know, he knew I was coming home for a while. Come in and train with us. Just keep yourself fit, football fitness. Because you know what it's like. Training in the gym to football fitness is completely different. You know, you have 6 weeks in a gym, you try and play a competitive football match like a pre-season, it doesn't get you right, so you need football training. So I came in, and after about 5 or 6 days, Graeme Souness got us in, says, listen, I like what I'm seeing. He says, you're an experienced player. I'd like you in around the group. He says, you mightn't get a lot of game time, but if I need you in emergencies, he says, but what also, I know you're doing your coaching badges. You want to become a coach. He says, you can be mentored by Tommy Craig, who Tommy was taking the reserve team. So what I've done is I registered as a player coach, and was then getting mentored by Tommy on the coaching side. But after about 3 or 4 games, Graham put me in the team. I think we didn't get a result in the first 3 games. We had a hard run, and then we went to Blackburn, and he started us, and we beat Blackburn 3-0. And I ended up playing 25, 30 times. So
what a player.
It was just like, wow.
And he asked you, what's Souness? Like, obviously another legend.
Thought he was brilliant, because the reason I thought he was brilliant, he wasn't a very popular choice. He was took over from Sir Bobby Robson. And the team weren't getting great results, and he was under a lot of pressure. And he never looked like a man under pressure. He never passed that into the players. He never showed. We had like some young players in the group. We had a young Charles and Zobbyad at the time.
He was on fire then, wasn't he?
Aye, Charles could have been, was a terrific young talent. But the manager was a proper man. Mm-hmm. He uses that word. He's one of the few pundits I love watching.
Yeah, he's brilliant, isn't he? Could he give a player a bit of hair?
Oh, when he used to join in, he would leave one of his naughty tackles in. I kept out of his way. I knew what he was capable of, but he was...
presence about him, isn't he?
Some player. I mean, that era that I'm very good friends with Terry McDermott and worked with him both as a player and a manager for many years. Was managed by Daglish and managed by Souness. Keegan obviously won a few, but those three, the medal collection from that era, were just phenomenal. It was like, and just had loads of respect for Souness. Had another icon of the game, and I just found him to be a real top bloke who protected his players and was an example of me of when the pressure's on, how to go about things.
Michael Unkin, a lot's been made in the press recently with him and Shearer. How did you find Michael?
Well, I've just said I've been asked many times since the book's been brought out and been serialised that what's been said hasn't surprised us. He looked like a player who didn't want to be with us. He didn't look at ease at the club. He didn't buy into a lot of the things in the community or into the fan base. Everyone to their own. So I just, I didn't.
Did he pull him up back in for that?
No, nah, I wasn't. I wasn't really surprised that. Hey, listen, he's still in the early times. I mean, I remember at West Brom away and Blackburn, and there was another game where West Ham, where he looked what he was, a world class striker, but. The injuries were a big issue. And I just felt when the serialisation of the book came out 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, that it wasn't a shock to me what he was saying, because it looked that way. It looked that way to someone who was sharing a dressing room with him.
Do you ever go up the horses when we're at there?
We went to horse race meetings. He's use of his helicopter and all that. And It's sad to find that he's had to use the book to be derogatory about the Newcastle fans, the club. Because what mystifies me is he says in the book that the owner of Madrid had said they accepted the bid from Newcastle, but they weren't pushing him out the door. So if he didn't really want to come to Newcastle,
stay
at Real Madrid. They tried to portray it as a similar one to when they signed Shearer, and they opened the stand at the stadium, and there was 20,000 there, and they had the big press conference. But it's probably easy to say it didn't pan out like Shearer's.
Shearer's going to end up ragdolling him, isn't he?
I wouldn't have thought there'll be they'll be sitting down for dinner together anytime soon.
Just finally on Newcastle, did no other team match the buzz that you got for playing with Newcastle?
No, I loved Fulham. I loved my time at Fulham. I had 2 great years at Sunderland, but I loved my time at Fulham. The club's so special to us. But nothing's going to ever replace the buzz of playing for your hometown club, seeing your mum and your dad and your brothers and sisters, your wife, your children. Because fortunately, my third child, he wasn't born first time I played round, but second time he was born, whether he was old enough to understand, I don't know, that's another thing. But they had that chance to see me pull on the famous black and white shirt.
How emotional was the last final appearance?
Well, I didn't actually know at the time it was. It was v Chelsea at St James's Park, and a result that got us into Europe. And the injuries had took their toll, so they were becoming an issue. And I decided that summer to knock the plane on the head and concentrate on the next stage.
Were you emotional?
There's been times where I thought, could I reverse the decision, but I always felt it was the right one.
Have you found the rigors of management since you got in it? And tough. Who did you take most from as well, sorry?
Oh, I took things from all my managers, various different things and positives. I always say I feel like I was so lucky that the managers I played under always give us positive feedback. And so you take a lot of things from them all. It's changed since I first took the job at Huddersfield to what it is now in terms of, whereas in the start, players and agents would come to the manager if they wanted any issues resolved, if they wanted a new contract and find out how they're playing. Now it's probably the deal direct with chief executives and owners. So the manager is more like a head coach. The pressure's on straight away, whatever level you're working at, because the turnaround in the situation with social media. It's a tough old gig.
That was some run you went on with Huddersfield, didn't it? I was doing that.
It's something
time.
That
you're proud of it.
I mean, it's not been beaten 43 games, beating the late great Brian Clough, an icon. So now it's something you look back on, and I've tried to do the similar things at the other clubs that I've had, and to try and repeat it and bring in similar type of players to what I had, but it's been near on impossible.
Need to ask you about Scottish football. What was your first impressions when you joined Kilmarnock? You
loved
done great
it.
First season, didn't you?
Well, we kept them up, and then in the summer, the second season, we rebuilt the squad. And when I left, when Barry come calling, I should have stayed at Kilmarnock. They tried to get us to stay. Only had one full year, calendar year there. And we were sixth in a tight league. And I should have stayed. I got tripped brilliantly. The standard of the football was far higher than people make out down south. You manage at Celtic Park, you manage at Ibrox, you manage at Pittodrie, at Tynecastle. Hibs weren't in the league then, but we knew they were going to come up. So, it's probably an area where I regret that I should have stayed there for longer.
Big Lee McCulloch, your assistant manager, how did you find him?
Great guy, brilliant help, him and Peter leaving, two terrific guys, got on really well, legend in Scotland, obviously.
I wouldn't go as far as legend, but...
two brilliant fellas, and helped me a lot, because obviously... To get to know about the Scottish game and what it was about.
Big McCulloch says to ask you about the Steve Bruce story.
Steve Bruce for Nicholas Bent, when he was dating his wife. His daughter, sorry. He'd certainly be upset if he was dating his wife. Nicholas was a young player at Birmingham, wasn't he? And he wasn't the shyest, as everyone's come across. And he turns up back home for lunch, and there's Nicholas Bentner lying on his couch in his front room. He wasn't too pleased with the Sky remote changing the channels.
That's tremendous, isn't it? I love it. Just on Kelly, do you still look out for the results?
Absolutely. Been up a few times since.
Oh, have you been back?
Aye, to watch games. Thought, brilliant with getting them into Europe. A club that's, I've real fondness.
Manager's not doing too great. I'm not on a headline out here, that, but would you be open to returning back to Kilmarnock?
He's turned the corner. It was a tough start. But certainly looks Scottish football wouldn't be an issue for me to go back and manage in that, definitely.
Lee, top man, thanks very much.
Cheers, Simon. Cheers, thank mate. You. Yeah.